The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, since every presidential candidate claims to believe in God, how would you know if any of them were really following God? Well, my friend, for starters, we can see if they are at least speaking the truth about the major issues of the day. After all, God says in the Bible that he hates a lying tongue. Now, of course, they will all claim to embrace the truth just as quickly as they claim to embrace God. Joe Biden certainly portrays himself as truthful, although I must say, nobody can quite phrase it as creatively as Joe. We choose truth over facts. Mr. Biden, from you, we would find it refreshing to have either. Of course, we're hearing nothing even close to truth regarding the horrible shootings in Ohio and Texas last week. Well, more gun control always sounds good, even to the point where many of the Republicans are getting caught up with it. We need to decipher the difference between knee-jerk reactions and sage old advice. The outlawing of guns simply means that only outlaws will have guns. Track with me for a moment. Let's listen in on the train of thought from an evil psychopathic murderer according to a liberal's utopian world. I want to shoot up a lot of people, but shucks, guns are now illegal. I suppose I could buy a gun on the black market, but to do that, I would have to break the law. Gee, I can't do that. Murder people? Sure, in a heartbeat. Women and children included. But buy a gun illegally? A man of conscience has to draw the line somewhere. For the record, I have no dog in this fight. I do not own or carry a gun myself. But I am concerned about our Second Amendment. I'm even more concerned about the First Amendment. Need I remind you that those who would suppress the Second are also trying to suppress the First by limiting the free speech that could, in their expert opinion, incite violence. But never once is such concern expressed with even a whisper of consistency. A self-proclaimed Bernie Sanders supporter tries to kill multiple Republicans at a baseball game and succeeds in wounding Representative Steve Scalise. Conservatives make it clear that they blame only the shooter, not Sanders. Of course, Democrats said the same thing back then, but what is significant is that conservatives and Republicans did not exploit this shamefully to score cheap political points. Several years later, an anti-immigrant murderer shows up at Walmart. Donald Trump is immediately blamed by Democrats for his supposed anti-immigrant rhetoric, even though this shooter made it clear that he had his views long before Trump, that Trump had nothing to do with his views, and that immigration wasn't his only reason for doing this. You don't hear this much. He was talking a lot about global warming and climate change and the Green Deal, saying that if he killed a lot of people, there would be less people to destroy the weather of our planet. Hours later, in Dayton, Ohio, a left-wing, self-proclaimed socialist and fan of Elizabeth Warren guns down many, killing nine. We hear virtually nothing about this killer's motive from the mainstream media, but the same mainstream media talks about the El Paso killer's motives 24/7, the immigrant part, not the climate change part. Meanwhile, conservatives, once again, being fair, do not blame Elizabeth Warren. And lest we forget, previously a self-proclaimed anti-Trump killer attacked a Jewish synagogue expressing disdain for Trump's pro-Israel policies. He was anti-Trump And yet Trump was still blamed by Democrats in the mainstream media. Of course, President Obama, who was seen in a picture with the anti-Semite Louis Farrakhan, is not blamed. Neither are Rashida Tlaib or Ilhan Omar for their vile anti-Jewish rhetoric. Another trip down recent memory lane. Jussie Smollett creates a hoax and lies about how he was attacked by two Trump supporters. Mayor Rahm Emanuel acknowledges the lie, but claims the lie was inspired by the toxic atmosphere created by Donald Trump. Lesson one, the militant left feels zero obligation to explain their double standards. Lesson two, while one of the El Paso shooter's motives may have made things seemingly convenient for Trump haters, Trump would have been blamed even if the guy was protesting that Walmart doesn't sell Slurpees. You just gotta love it. Democrats complain that Trump and his followers incite violence. Meanwhile, we see Democrats like Maxine Waters encouraging people to get in the faces of Republicans every time they show themselves in public. We see congressmen like Joaquin Castro outing the names of Donald Trump contributors and then defending himself by saying, well, it shouldn't lead to violence. Oh, of course not. Not at all. He wasn't doing this as a way of intimidating Trump supporters and giving them something to fear. He just outed the name so that people who hate Trump can take his supporters out for a cup of coffee. Like the mob that visited Mitch McConnell's home when he was recuperating from an operation last week, shouting all kinds of insidious threats about what they want to do to him physically. And then when groups like Antifa go beyond the threats, actually beating up conservatives as Democrat town mayors instruct the police to stand down, the left responds by saying, democracy in action, free speech. Yeah, it seems violence is the only kind of free speech they ever get behind, especially violence aimed at stopping speech. And when conservatives complain about the violence, they get to hear self-righteous, sanctimonious lectures. That wasn't real violence. Not real violence, because it was aimed at hateful, bigoted conservatives. Indeed, those who complain about the violence, they're the real violent ones. They're being violent with their words. Catching on, folks? See how it works? They just keep making this stuff up as they go. The rest of us are supposed to roll over and play dead. The left complains about gun violence and then endorses as much violence as you can possibly imagine. From people like Robert De Niro and Joe Biden bragging about wanting to punch Trump out, to celebrities calling for his assassination and then saying they were only kidding, to Kathy Griffin holding a severed Trump head while posing for a picture, and naturally, any speech inspired by these expressions of free speech, any violence inspired by these expressions of free speech, is supposed to be overlooked. Threatening a Republican senator, harassing people in restaurants, calling for an assassination, actually literally beating up a conservative reporter, none of that concerns them. A president who himself is married to a legal immigrant wants to protect our borders and make sure people enter our country legally. That concerns them. And now let me introduce a man who always shows up with concerns of his own. Say hello. And this time he's not on the phone. In person, incarnate. Say hello to Pastor Jim Barrier.
Now, come on, Bob. Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, well, I need to learn to open up more.
It's awesome to be here because normally I'm on the phone, but I'm in town in San Diego.
For a class reunion.
My 50-year high school reunion from Mount McGill in Spring Valley. And with me tonight is my friend Brian Slagle. We've been co-workers and known each other for 28 years. And he has done a lot of radio stuff. And I said, why don't you come along and just sit in the studio with us?
It's my pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you, Brian. Yeah,
absolutely. I love hearing your opinion.
Thank you.
Well, then you're in the right place.
Well, yeah, I had no idea what his opinion might have been.
we're probably all in the same stage,
vicinity.
But,
yeah.
But I've encouraged him to be a little contrarian tonight because I usually do that with you. I like to take another look at things, but we pretty much agree on most of this stuff. And I'm just kind of dumbfounded sometimes when I hear things that Joe Biden says or just some of these people. I'm thinking, does anybody really listen to this and can they believe this stuff? Do they have any sense of logic and semantics or definition of terms? And I wonder, they have an audience. Obviously, they have people that support them, but it seems to me that it's more emotionally based than intellectually based. Because I just don't know who could listen to some of this stuff and say, oh, yeah, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, and if Western civilization survives and our history books don't get rewritten, history will paint this as the time known as the age of idiocy. We had the age of reason. We had the age of enlightenment. We are the age of idiocy. Never has such a great country just flushed everything down the toilet.
Yeah. And also, being a student of history, I know that there's kind of ebb and flow. And
again, I always thought they hadn't come up with history yet when you were in school.
That's true. Well, yeah, 50-year reunion, they didn't really have history yet. They just had science fiction projecting. And so we read 1984 and Fahrenheit 451 and Brave New World, and all of that stuff's come and gone.
It's dead on accurate.
So that's kind of scary. But I still hold on to hope, but I've said this many times on your show. I will vote every chance I get, and I will speak out. We have a voice, but I am at the point where I believe the only hope we have for this society is an out-and-out renewal, a spiritual revival where people wake up to a higher level of truth, which is how God himself sees things. And that has happened in history a number of times, and it changes a nation.
I agree. It must happen now, or we have no hope.
Absolutely. That's my hope.
I agree with you 100%. I think the people need hope. They need something new. They need something that's real. And you don't get that from man's wisdom very often. You know, they need something really, really powerful, for sure.
No. And, you know, I call him Uncle Ron. I loved Ronald Reagan, Uncle Ron. He's probably the best president in my lifetime. And as we've already established, I'm pretty old. But he wasn't perfect. And he did some things that I, you know, was not happy about, but he did a good job. But I remember when he got elected, the evangelical community just was having, they were rejoicing, like, this is the second coming. And I kept saying, you know, Ronald Reagan is not the savior, and he can only do so much as president because he's bound by Congress, Senate, and the Supreme Court. He's a good guy, but he was not the hope of this nation. Donald Trump was not the hope of this nation. I voted for him. Everybody hear that? I voted for Donald, and I will vote for him again. I can't wait to see what knucklehead he runs against, because that's...
and what nickname he comes...
What a clown class.
And I always hear people saying, how could you as a Christian vote for him? I say, I'm not electing Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has kept his campaign promises far more than a lot of the pure conservatives. So in politics, you make a choice.
That was a big surprise to me, to be honest with you. I didn't trust him. He has kept those promises.
Yeah, I didn't.
It's a big surprise.
I was voting for the lesser of two evils.
I understand.
But
absolutely.
I have been very, very impressed.
Absolutely.
Since he took
over. I think all of us have been surprised on many points. And he might have been able to do more if he had anybody helping him. Even the Republicans aren't helping him.
If even his own party or even some of his own cabinet members had his back, he'd do a lot. And yet, look at what he's done despite all that.
I hear music.
All right. When you hear the music, that's just God from heaven saying that he approves of everything we're talking about. And I'm getting out of the way of the lightning right now. We'll be right back.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization.
Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. WisdomWorks Christian Preschool.
To 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined in the studio today by my good friend Jim Barrier and a special guest, Brian Slagle.
Now, I've been asked to explain something. We mentioned briefly, I'm in town this week for my high school reunion, 50-year reunion. I never thought I'd live that long, but if you've ever been to one of those, and for you younger people, someday you may do this, but you go to the reunion.
And with Facebook and Twitter, they may not feel the need anymore. We went years without seeing people we grew up
with. Yeah. Well, and really the reason I went was because of friends of mine that I've reconnected in Facebook said, you got to come to this. And I said, okay. So you go in there. When you first enter the building, you're seeing people. And they have a desk. They give you a name tag because no one looks like they did in high school. And there's a wall with pictures of people. It's in loving memory. People who have passed on since 50 years ago in high school, and lo and behold, there's my picture and name up on the wall. Somebody got word that I...
For you skeptics out there that don't believe in the resurrection, right. We witnessed it in San Diego this weekend.
There it is, and of course, they had door prizes later on, and one of the door prizes was, who traveled the furthest to be at this reunion?
Clearly,
I said,
yeah,
well, hey,
yes.
I came back from the dead. Beat that.
Well, you know, it's not that original, Jim, because every election year, dead people resurrect from
and
the grave
Democrat.
And vote Democrat.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? Now, I came back from the dead. I'm still voting Republican.
There
so.
You go.
I can never go mainstream. But so anyway, that's why I'm here. And it's been a blast and getting to see old friends and everything. And of course, for those of you that don't know, I live in Texas, and the weather in Texas in August isn't the same as the weather in San Diego in August. And nice weather you arranged for me during my visit. Thank
you
very much.
It's weather that was described, I think, at the end of the book of Revelation.
Something like that, yeah. It's when I first moved there 28 years ago, the first summer rolled around, and I thought, oh, my, I've had bad theology and I've died and gone to the wrong place. There is a purgatory and I'm in it. And
I thought you'd made a huge mistake.
Well, I did, but you know, hindsight now, we know it was absolutely the right thing to do. And it's been just a great, great adventure, but it's always good to come back to San Diego. And when I get home, my first Sunday back there, I'll tell the church, it's good to be back here in San Antonio, but while I was gone, I had real Mexican food.
There you go.
And that always goes over real well.
And getting back to the weather, Dana and I have been out there in July visiting my son. But I must say, bad as the weather is, given the choice between that weather and Sacramento, I think I would take that weather hands down.
Mm. Well, yeah. And Brian lives in Tucson, so it's hot out there right now.
Another version of hell, but yeah.
But you know, I lived in Arizona 2 years. That's a drier heat. It's the humidity that drives me nuts.
Yeah,
I can
an oven. Yeah, it's dry.
Yeah, dry.
Yeah. But boy, if you at least don't have the humidity. It's
most
nice.
Of the year we don't.
Well, I want to know then, in the winter, is it a dry cold?
It's lovely, actually.
Yeah, yes. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it actually does get a little chilly in the winter there. You wouldn't think, but it does. Yeah.
So here I am back in San Diego, and then I'm a third generation San Diego native, and I have children, grandchildren, and one great grandson, all of them born in San Diego. I have a sixth generation San Diego native in my family, my great grandson, and I bet you couldn't find five of those. Some of it is because I'm really old and all of that, but so I have deep roots here, and we might as well just go off the map here. We were talking before the show. When I lived here, I'm a diehard sports fan, San Diego fan. I grew up with the Chargers and the Padres, had season tickets to both teams before I moved. And the football team left the town, and I got a divorce.
It's something we don't even speak of here in San Diego.
Well, I took all my Chargers gear to the Goodwill. I said, no, I'm
sorry. Don't tell me the Goodwill didn't want it.
Oh, no, you know, they'll take anything, you know. But so now I'm down to one team. I have one team left. And so, I, you know, it's all part of the roots and part of the deep history of being a San Diegan. And you guys have it good. I hope you know how good you've got it living here. It's just a beautiful city.
We do. I mean, again, as far as topography goes, California is a great place to live.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But that isn't everything. Because, you know, I've been to San Francisco a lot, and that's a beautiful city. But, man, that is the weirdest, warped out, craziest place.
Oh, Rod Serling's Twilight Zone couldn't even come close to San Francisco.
I got to visit there recently, and it was in the last few years. And I was blown. I hadn't been in quite a while. And I was blown away by the changes that had happened in the city. And it's sad. It's actually very sad because it's beautiful. And there are some really wonderful people there. But the way they've let that go and the things you have to step over... Just walking downtown. Yeah. It's just, it's very, very
And
sad.
I hear a lot of that's close to Nancy's Walden.
Yeah. Yes.
Nancy Pelosi's Walden house.
Compound.
Lady that says walls are evil.
Yeah, walls.
She lives
walls
in a Walden community.
Of course. So. Except for me.
Yeah.
Right. And we've talked about this before, but I don't know what is going on with your governor. And
I heard just the other day there's a recall campaign. I don't know if it'll get much traction.
Good luck.
Because most of the conservatives have left the state. But boy, it's nice to at least see somebody thinking about it.
And they're talking about, you know, well, they did the thing so that you can't run for president unless...
Unless you turn over your taxes.
Yeah, turn over. You know, so what? The Democrats carry California every time. And in this case now, all of a sudden, they're going to be all for the Electoral College, right? they're going to want all the votes. And I don't think it's going to matter. I think, again, back to that subject, I've been watching these debates and where do they find these people? So whoever it is.
It really staggers the imagination. And just when you think things couldn't get stupid or somebody says something
Stupid. Yeah, never say... You know, that they can't get any stupider because someone takes that as a personal challenge.
And they rise to the challenge very well.
So whenever, however it all falls, whoever Trump debates, when it gets to that stage, that's going to be so, I'm going to get the popcorn out.
My concern is that it may be none of these people, that it may be a surprise. Yeah. I'm a little concerned that someone like Michelle Obama might go in. And what concerns me is you know, I think her viewpoints are just as idiotic, but I think she's a little more invulnerable to criticism. I think that if Trump were to go after her, even a lot of, not that Republicans haven't betrayed him already, but even more might come to her side and kind of, I think she's almost like a hands-off person. And that concerns me. Now, she says she doesn't want to run, but they all say
they always say that.
The more they say they don't want to run, the more concerned I am that they're going to
run. You should be. That's right.
So that's my concern. I don't take anybody that's in the race right now seriously. Well, we're off to another break. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
People are enjoying Bob Siegel's time travel novel, Push the Winds Around. Check out these customer reviews on Amazon.com. This is one of those books, like certain movies, where you keep thinking about it long after you finished. Once I picked it up, I didn't want to put it down until I'd read the entire book. Literally, a page-turner. Every character came to life. Their personalities were well-defined and consistent. First thing I did after I finished the book was to ask about the sequel. The next customer said, "I read this book cover to cover in one sitting. Great read with completely unexpected ending that left me wishing there was just one more chapter. Give yourself a couple of hours to read it all at once because you won't want to put it down." Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined with two great guys, Jim Barrier and Justin. Oh, I said Justin Slagle because I know Slagle,
right.
But this is actually Brian Slagle. We have not yet established.
I'll answer anything.
Related.
It's fine.
What's his name? And
that's right.
We're going to jump now because we talked about a subject, and I've talked with Brian about it. And talked with you, and we would like to talk a little bit about the evangelical community, and I'm just going to narrow it into the churches that call themselves Christians, they're followers of Christ, and they're not, we're not talking about the whole ecumenical world and everything, but just Christians, evangelicals, who preach Jesus, leave the Bible, preach the gospel, and the seeming lack of effort to do things to help the poor and needy. Now, because we've talked, the church that I pastor in San Antonio, that's what we do. It's an inner city church, so we're in the place to do that. We really work with a rough crowd, with the hard to reach, the people that wouldn't normally darken the doorway of a church, and that, frankly, probably some churches would not welcome them so much. And Brian asked me a while ago, he said, what if every church within that community, the evangelicals, what if they all made some kind of effort? And I know Skyline does stuff, but what if every church that names the name of Christ were to make some effort to help people, whether it's single moms or homeless people or people that need food or people that need help? I think we could almost put the government out of business with the welfare and the things that people are demanding the government do for them. I think if the churches would step up, I think we'd make a huge effort. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and there was a time when the church did that much better.
Yeah.
And we didn't need government welfare agencies. Part of the problem was that liberal fundamentalist split that at the turn of the 20th century. And some pastors were saying, we don't really take the gospel seriously. We don't take miracles seriously or sin nature. But if we're out feeding the poor and taking care of the homeless and taking care of the widow and orphan, that's what Jesus wants us to do. Well, then the other side, known as the fundamentalists, could say, we really believe in the gospel. But they so overreacted that it was like they were afraid that if they went out and fed the poor and sheltered the homeless, something they had already been doing, that they'd be associated with the liberals. So kind of became polarized.
Yeah, I get that.
Now, the evangelical movement started by Billy Graham was supposed to be a step back toward the balance. So I do draw a distinction between an evangelical and a fundamentalist, but a lot of people use the terms interchangeably, and sometimes their actions are interchangeable.
Well, and you know that I love Billy, and I don't think there's been anybody like him since. There might not have been anybody quite like him ever, but in that same wake of his revivalist movement and all the things he did, I heard it a lot in churches. It was, we don't want to have a social gospel. That was the term. And so we're supposed to be preaching the gospel and heaven is more important. And so there became this kind of a move to the other direction of, those things aren't as important as people hearing the truth and accepting Christ and all of those things. And I think there's been some neglect. Now, this is a story that I want to tell you. A couple of years ago, was sitting with friends, and we run a soup kitchen in our church, and we really do a lot to help people, I think, in a good way, and feed them and clothe them and do stuff. And I have a small congregation. My Sunday morning crowd is maybe about 30 people, 40 on Easter or a big day. So my friend said, well, how many of your 30 people from Sunday volunteer to work with the homeless and in the soup kitchen and stuff? And I said, I don't know. We never thought about it. So Leslie and I sat down and wrote out a list, and we started writing names of people who regularly volunteer. 25 names out of 30. 25 out of 30, which, if you want to do the math, that's 84%. I did it for you. And these friends of mine in a big city attended a church that had a roster at least of 30,000. Now, it was a revolving door thing, but 30,000 members of this church. And I said, what if 25,000 members of your 30,000 members just gave a couple hours a week? And we were talking about, what if they, you know, we tithe.
What if 100 of them did?
Exactly.
No, but just go with me on this. If 25,000 people in this city volunteered and reached out and did stuff to reach out to people and give a tangible demonstration of the love of God, what would happen? And they said, it would change the city. The city would be rocked by that. And I said, so something's out of balance somewhere. Now, I know my church, every church has a calling and a certain thing they work in, but you can go through every Bible, every book in the Bible, and it talks about taking care of the poor and needy. When Jesus said on that day, he'll separate them like sheep and goats, and he'll say, when I was naked, you clothed me. When I was hungry, you fed me. In prison, you visited. And they said, when did we ever see you like that? And he said, whenever you sought for the least of these, when you did that, you did it for me. And he didn't say, whenever you did it for believers. He didn't say, whenever you did it. He just said, just do it.
Well, not only that, but early in his ministry, he said, I've come to preach the gospel to the poor.
Yeah.
People don't understand. We're seeing one side of the gospel. The gospel means the good news that we can be completely delivered from mm-hmm. sin across the board. Now, we emphasize one side of that, delivered from our own sin.
Yeah.
Forgiven for our own sin. But that also means we are supposed to be delivering people from the effects of other people's sins.
Exactly.
Committed against. Yep. That includes feeding the poor. Exactly. That includes sheltering the homeless. That includes speaking out against the tyrannical government. That includes correcting Joe Biden's blunders.
Okay,
see, I need you to bring it back to that.
Of course.
But I think there's a huge thing here, and I don't want to treat it as a negative. I want to say, listeners out there, I know we have a lot of listeners that are believers. They attend good churches. We'll probably have a spot the next break about Skyline. It's the place where I became a believer. And there are good churches and good people and good pastors, but maybe we can do a little more.
Absolutely. Okay, you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, and we will be right back. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church.
you're monkeying around with that dial, you always want to stop when you get to 1170 AM or 96.1 FM, because you're listening now to the Bob Siegel Show with Jim Barrier and Brian Slagle.
That was a lovely, timely segue into the Skyline.
Yeah, and you know, most of my commercials for Skyline are comical. That's my only serious one, and it just matched it exactly what you had said. Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I will throw my amen in there. Skyline Church had an impact on me as a young man. I was a teenager, had never been to church, had never read a Bible, and through Skyline Church, I was introduced to Christ and became a believer, and to use some biblical language, I put my hand to the plow and never looked back, and that's been 51 years because I became a believer in between my junior and senior year of high school, and have great, great memories there. And I saw people last night at my reunion that I knew in the youth group at Skyline Church way back when, and they're still faithful. So that's a good thing, and I'm tickled when I hear that. I'm pleased to hear that. I know Skyline does a lot of things, and a lot of churches do make an effort back to the just meeting the human needs. And it's not qualified in the scripture that they have to be Christians that you help, nor is it ever suggested that you do that so that you can get them to close their eyes, bow their head, raise their hand, and pray the prayer. It just feed them because they're hungry. Okay? The rest will take care of itself. I'll tell you another story. We do the soup kitchen. It's a rough crowd. Oh, tough crowd, Luck Rodney would say. one night we had a guy that was a little surly, and it could have been alcohol-induced, but he was just grumpy and giving people a hard time, and I get him to settle down, and I work with him, and at the end of the night, we're cleaning up. They're cleaning up the kitchen, and somebody says to me, what are we supposed to do with a person like that? And I said this, and it became a mantra for us. We're supposed to love them. And love them and keep loving them until they believe we love them. Then they may be open to the notion that God loves them.
That's it.
And that's how we do it.
And that can be a tough love, too. It doesn't mean sometimes that those people have to stay in control of all situations. But yeah, love them.
And I've trained my people for years, and they bought into it. God bless them. They got the vision. If I can say this rightly, they followed my lead on it. And I told them up front, I said, we're going to have people in here that smell bad, look bad, but just love them. Every human being needs a sense of dignity, and they need to know that they're loved and accepted. We're going to give them that. We're going to give them a meal, but more than that, we're going to give them a sense that they're cared for, at least for 2 hours. There's a place that people really love them. And so we've done that, and I think we've done it well. It doesn't mean you condone everything. It doesn't mean you endorse everything, but you just love them. And when I have to, very rarely, but if I have to take them aside and talk to them about an issue, I can do that. And everybody knows, get the sheriff, and I'm the one that...
Well, but you've already gained credibility exactly. And shown that you cared about them by that time.
You've proven, I've had an opportunity to watch Jim and Leslie do what they do in San Antonio. It was my hometown. And it's truly... I think one of the most meaningful things I've seen, especially from a small fellowship, the amount of lives you guys have impacted over the last 20 years is staggering. And when the government wouldn't help these people and would tell other people, you can't help these people, you guys really did that. I think you're hitting on something that's really just a heart issue. And I think the church as a whole has a really good heart. I think the church has a heart for people. Sure. I think they get lost a little bit, get a little distracted. And we've all been guilty, me as well. And I think resources sometimes get put in places that could be used to affect lives differently than they are currently being used. Yeah. And I just think it's something to be reminded of, something to take before the Lord and to be sensitive to, that every community has hurting people. And it may not be that they're on drugs or they're on alcohol or they don't have food, but they may need their car repaired, or they may need someone to watch their children, or they may need someone to just encourage them. And maybe they're a shut-in like Skyline does, and minister to people that don't have people in their lives. Yeah. So it's just being sensitive to that. And I think the body as a whole probably should just take that before the Lord more often.
And I think we can do a little better job, and that's why we wanted to talk about this tonight. And this is going to be a great segue, Bob. You mentioned that 20 years. Mm. I'm coming up in March. I will have been 20 years at this church and a total of 40 years of being a pastor. And So I announced I am retiring in March from my position at the church. I'm not going to retire from being a Christian. I'm not going to retire from loving
and
people.
You're not going to retire from coming on this radio show, I hope. Although I understand that's going to be up to your wife.
Well,
your schedule.
We'll just pick and choose the dates.
I'll just write you and say, is your wife okay with this date? Yeah.
She knows that I love this. And probably because I won't have the pulpit on a weekly basis, I need an outlet to get this stuff out of me.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you're my guy. I have been talking with our sister station in San Antonio. I'd love to have a show again.
Yeah, then I could come on your show once a month.
And that's how we started. Yeah, you came on my show.
I came on your show when you had a San Antonio show.
So that's up in the air. But Leslie wants to travel some. But I am retiring, and everyone said, well, what are you going to do? You know, because I haven't had an associate in recent years that could kind of step in behind me. But 2 years ago, I met a young man, and one of the ladies in my church sent me a video. She said, you need to check this out. So I look at this video, and it's this church of, I use the term millennials. I hope that's not offensive, but young people. They're in their 20s and 30s, and they're rocking. And there's like 120 of these kids. I call them kids. The pastor's a kid. And they're meeting in a school auditorium. And I saw that video, and at first I got mad. I really did. I got mad at God, and I thought, I'm down here working my tail off, and I can't get a crowd bigger than 30. And this guy shows up, and in 2 months he's got 120 people. And then I thought it through, and I thought, you're looking at this all wrong. And so I called him. I got his number, called him. I said, hey, can we get together? And I introduced myself. And we sat and talked for a couple hours, and I found out he actually came down there. He brought these people with him because there had been a church split, and these young people didn't really throw in with either of the factions, and they had a heart to reach Southtown, which is where my church is at in San Antonio, and reach the unchurched. And so we talked, and I said, how can I help? And they needed a place for their band to practice. And so I said, use my building. And we've just kind of come alongside each other. And I've been mentoring this kid. He calls me his mentor for the last 2 years. And we finally reached an agreement with his board and our board, and we're all bored. And we're going to start doing joint services next Sunday. And then from then until March, we'll be kind of sharing space. And then I'm just going to turn over the whole thing to them.
Oh, so it'll be next March when you actually...
Next March is my retirement. But it's a great thing because
I don't have to check with your wife for the ensuing year. It's only after March that I have to check with
after her, March. Yeah, I'm with you at least till March.
All right.
No. So, but it's been a cool thing, and this is going to segue into maybe our final segment. But one of the things I wanted to talk about and talk with Brian is the millennials and the younger generation. There are people of faith. They believe in God. They believe in Jesus. But they just don't get church. Let's talk about that.
Okay, we will. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Buying a home? Selling a home? It goes without saying that you need somebody experienced and skilled, but you also need a realtor you can trust, a man who will look out for your interests as if they were his own. This is Bob Siegel, here to steer you the right direction with just two words, Fred Valduti. Fred works with Realty Executives All Area, a company that has sold thousands of homes locally since 1994. Putting your home up for sale or selling a home can be stressful, filled with decisions you never anticipated. So put your mind at ease and call Fred Falduti. He sold my home for me at top price. Every step along the way, I benefited from his wisdom and a very generous usage of his time. By the way, Fred Falduti received the Executive of the Year Award for 2014. What? You say that was a couple of years ago? Listen, wise guy, do you want to mark the calendar? Or do you want somebody to sell your home for you? Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
Not sure when to try an unusual novel? Let the customers speak for themselves. Here is another Amazon customer review for Bob Siegel's latest book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. While there is nothing in this book that would stop you from giving it to or reading it to your kids, this book will certainly hold an adult's interest as well. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has it all. Magic, talking cats, bullies who get their comeuppance, fun dialogue, and a good story. Do not let the title fool you. While Christmas does play a prominent role, this is really not a Christmas story, and it can be read at any time of the year, except February 31st. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM. This is Bob Siegel, Jim Barrier, and Ryan Slagle.
Perfect bumper music. We are talking about why there is a generation of people who have faith, but they just don't get church. And Brian and I have talked a lot about this, and some of it is because the church isn't offering what they're looking for. And Brian has a lot of friends that are not churchy people. Brian grew up in church. His parents were ministers, traveling ministers, evangelist stuff and everything. So he knows the church culture all too well.
Absolutely. But, just have been there, done that.
But you have a lot of friends. We have friends, and they're people. They love Jesus, but it just the church is not cutting it.
Absolutely. I think there's a large number, and you can see some of the data over the last 30 years if you go do the research. The number, the percentages of people that are leaving that still have a faith, and they're not finding something there that seems to be tangible or meaningful enough for them to tie into. And there's a lot of reasons. There's not one reason. But what we spoke about a little bit earlier with the church, utilizing the resources, maybe in other ways to be dealing with the community level, that might be something that might draw people back to getting involved. I think it just makes us, should make us more introspective about our, not only our faith, but how we're walking it out.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. I know this because this, I know that there are millions of people that they don't go to church. I also know that the millennial generation, they want to see good done.
Absolutely.
And they're aware of the social ills and the problems and the wounds and the things that people are suffering, and they would like to help, and perhaps if they had an opportunity to do that through church. And I'm not saying that we just need to abandon all, you know, teaching and doctrine and all of the good stuff, but maybe if we supplemented what we normally do in church, that might help. There's the other phenomena. We've talked about this. What do we call the churches that have the big band and all the stuff we call them?
Big lights, big drums.
Big lights, big drums church. And he coined that term, and I've used that all the time.
Actually, I stole it, but, it's okay.
I got it from you. You know, one time you give credit to the person, the second time you say someone said, and then after that it's yours.
Okay.
So that's the rule for plagiarism in preaching. I've talked to a lot of people, and they'll go for a while to these places, and there's great music, and it's entertaining. But after a while, it's like, okay, you're giving me appetizers, but you're not, you know, it gets old. And it's like, I can just watch TV or turn on the radio. I can hear some good music, you know, anywhere. And there has to be more to it than the entertainment. And I think the church has really overdone it with the entertainment part. And I think at some point, that leaves people wanting. So that's another issue.
Absolutely.
In there. And then there's the classic things. They ask for money too much. They're always asking for money. I hear that all the time. And the church arsenal is the name of the church that's going to be arsenal.
Skyline doesn't take an offering anymore.
Do they do?
You can see where you can give. There's a receptacle, but there's no more of this announcing the offering.
Good. I'm all for it. And the church that's moving in, Arsenal, the youngest, you go on your phone and you do it electronically, and it's a great thing. My people are so old I tried to talk my elders into just, can we put a box at the back of the room? And they said, no, it's part of our active worship. And they're that generation. But a lot of people are just sick to death of the begging for money.
Well, it's very intimidating to a visitor or somebody who's not a Christian that the offering plate comes by and people are looking at them.
Yeah. And we've all seen this stuff. You know, the guys that are flying jets and driving Lamborghinis and living at a different level. And it's a turnoff.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that the body of Christ and the younger ones especially do want to make a difference. I think they really do. I have a millennial son, and he's definitely of that ilk, wants to be something that's actually changing lives. And I think that the church as a whole, when we focus on things like the giving, for instance, although important, I think that is a turnoff to some people. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have resources. You need them to do certain things. But they need to be in the right context and in the right order, honestly.
Yeah.
And I think we just need to be keeping our head focused on how do we meet the need of the person that's looking to fellowship with others, if that's what they're called to do, and then how do you reach the community? Just
Brian,
be aware.
Brian, tell us a little bit about your church background.
Briefly, my parents began ministry when I was 10 months old. So they were full-time itinerant. They sang and traveled all over the world. And I was dragged around the world for 17 years.
Now, did you have the typical missionary kid story of leaving the faith for a while and coming back? Or did
no,
you
not
stay
exactly.
with it all this time?
No, not exactly. No, I've always had a real strong, the Lord's been very gracious to me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Wonderful. But but I had some time coming off the road where I was tired of being in the building because we were there five nights a week, you know, that kind of thing. But no, the Lord's been very faithful with me, and I have a real soft spot for how he's brought me through that process. So yeah, no, it's all good. But it's been a long, long time.
A very long time. I've lost my voice.
Okay. we'll defer to Brian. That's okay. Sorry.
I echo what Jim said. I think we have a responsibility as people that have been in the faith for some time. I think to lead the younger generations, to show them how to be sensitive. And I think, like I said, I think there are people still that meet regularly and have facilities and have resources that have really wonderful hearts and intentions. I just think there is an opportunity for us to revisit that, really see where we're led and touch the 10 block radius maybe of our building. You know, what kind of impact would that make if everyone focused on that?
Yeah.
And you said it earlier, Jim, you might do away with a lot of the welfare programs that the government doesn't do very well.
No, and a lot of the money from the government never goes toward the welfare anyway.
And wouldn't it be neat, and wouldn't it be a blessing if we're actually walking that out and touching and changing lives for the better in a practical sense? And I just think it's something people should really consider.
Yes. I think that's right on. And some of the institutions, the Salvation Army, YMCA, those all began as you know,
oh, Boy vehicles. Scouts, Girl Scouts,
absolutely.
And so why not now?
Yep, absolutely.
Well, Jim, I'm glad you got your voice back in the last few minutes. I was going to give you an offer. I was going to let you just try it, and if it didn't come out right, we'd call it tongues, and I was going to interpret for you. What Jim said was partly cloudy with chance of showers. All right. Hey, guys, a wonderful time. Sorry the time went by so quickly, but Jim, nice to see you in person. Brian,
great
an absolute
fun.
Pleasure.
It was an honor.
You.
Thank you.
Hope you'll come on our show again sometime. We'll see you next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.